Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The following is a special KMOX sports presentation. Welcome to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communication products for more than 150 years. Now, the Strike Zone on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Awesome to be with you guys. It is the Strike Zone here. 2 hours of baseball talk here on Sports Open Line. We're going to be talking to Keith Costas from MLB Network coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes. Next hour, we'll talk some more prospects with the minor league season just underway. Jim Callis from MLB.com is going to join me. We'll talk a lot about the Cardinals system, where there could be help this year, the top guys, all of that stuff. So a lot of good baseball for you. In between, in and around all of that, we'll talk about current events. God, today's game was, you had the little rain delay at the beginning. You had the little, kind of a, what was it, a 17-minute rain delay in the game. But the game really dragged because 11 walks. The Cardinals walked 11 Mets batters. It's almost a miracle, by the way, that you have 11 walks, 9 singles allowed to go along with that, and the Mets only scored 4 runs. And again, it's two things, right? I do think some of the Cardinals pitchers, but in particular, Cody Whitley, Hennessy's Cabrera, a couple of the Cardinals pitchers did a really nice job of getting out of some of that. And even Gant got himself out of his own jams there a bit. And you're just dancing with the devil there too much, though, man. That's just, that you know, 11 walks, you're lucky if you don't get blown out when you walk 11 people. So part of it is Cardinals made some good pitches when they needed to. Part of it's the Mets. Most of the Mets aren't swinging the bats very well. Like, Alonso's been pretty good. Nimmo's not even playing. He was swinging it well, but he's not even playing. So, you know, you split the four-game series. No big deal there. I think getting 2 out of 4 is fine. The Mets might not be playing great, but they're a fine team. Like, they're the preseason favorite to win the East. So they're a talented group. And, look, Taijuan Walker pitched great. I mean, you know, and he's a good pitcher. It's not like some rando no-name guy came out there throwing 85 and shut you out. I mean, this is a guy that throws mid-90s, got a wicked slider. You know, when he's healthy, he's a really talented pitcher. So he outpitched your guys today. And that was really the bottom line, because even if you didn't walk 11 guys, you scored one run. You had 3 hits, and a lot of that had to do with the Mets pitching, not just your lineup. So we'll be talking about current events. Still overall, what is it now? Cardinals have won 10 of their last 14. So pretty good stretch here over the last couple of weeks. You got the Rockies this weekend. We'll get into all of that as we go. We are going to talk about Albert. I promised this on Twitter earlier today that we would talk about this. Of course, Albert designated for assignment by the Angels today. He will clear waivers. Nobody's going to claim the $30 million contract. The Angels will pay that either way. And we'll see where it goes from there. And that immediately led to a lot of buzz. And I'll bring this up with Keith Costas in the next segment. And we are, by the way, going to be taking your text messages on Albert tonight. So fire it up. It's 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. And I'll throw that out again later because we won't get to the text until later in the show. But we got a lot of reaction. I got into it with a lot of people today about Albert and the Cardinals. A lot of fans are like, oh, I totally love it, dude. I would pay to see Albert join the Cardinals right now. And I fully get why. I mean, I totally get it. I understand and feel the emotional attachment that you have to Albert. He's still the single greatest athlete I've ever covered. He was amazing. And if he were to put on the Cardinals uniform and step to the plate at Busch Stadium, I would have the goosebumps right along with everybody else. I'd be sitting there watching it going, that's a moment. Like, this is cool. but does it really make sense? Does it make sense from the Cardinals' perspective? Does it make sense from Albert's perspective? We'll address that first part as we go through the show today. Does it make sense from the Cardinals' perspective? But I'm going to hit that second part right now because I just saw this. There are some quotes coming out of Anaheim from Joe Maddon here within the last 5 or 6 minutes that kind of sum some of this up. Here's Joe Maddon talking about Albert Pujols. Quote, he does not want to be a bench player of any kind. Where is he playing regularly with the Cardinals? Nowhere. I mean, your first baseman is Paul Goldschmidt. The only position that Albert can play is first base. So if Albert's going to continue his career, I'm assuming it's going to be in the American League. And with that statement, that's pretty definitive too. He does not want to be a bench player of any kind. Straight from his current manager, well, I guess now former manager, straight from Joe Maddon. Because the problem in Anaheim was Otani's the DH, and he's a rock star, and Jared Walsh is the first baseman because he's a lot better hitter right now than Albert is. So given that statement, I think we all can agree that Albert doesn't make any sense for the Cardinals. Now, if he were open to a bench thing, I think we could we will have that conversation later. That's a detailed conversation that I can't do in 1 minute. So just wanted to throw that out there, and I hate to crush all of your dreams if you were hoping for it, but that's a pretty straight-up quote. So we'll talk more about that and Cardinals, you know, current circumstance. Going into the weekend with the Rockies, we'll get into all of that as we go through. We'll get some of your text messages in at 314-436-7900. Coming up next, we'll check in with Keith Costas from MLB Network here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, great to be with you guys on this Thursday night, talking some baseball. Happy to have Keith Costas with us from MLB Network. And, of course, you'll find Keith on Twitter at his name, which is super convenient. I didn't get lucky like that, Keith. I had to put a number at the end of mine because there's some other Kevin Wheeler out there that took it before I could get it. So I had to throw the number on there. But congratulations on not having to do that, man. How you been? Everything good?
I'm good, yeah. It's a little bit of a unique name and a little being too internet addicted. So it's a little bit of a combination of both.
Yeah, you struck early, I guess. You struck early.
Yeah, exactly.
Multi-million dollar question of the day. Are you dying to see Albert back with the Cardinals after today's news?
I mean, look, can I make any kind of reasonable argument for how he could help the team and why it's a good move from a baseball perspective? No, I can't. I mean, I could try, but I'm not going to bore you with that. But as a fan, after what we've been through in the last 18 months, not having fans in the stands and longing for some sort of normalcy in terms of the fan-player relationship and being in the ballpark, I'm not going to sit here and say I wouldn't be absolutely thrilled to see Albert wearing the birds on the bat one more time. So am I expecting it? No. Can I rationalize it? No, I cannot. But would I be all about it if it happened? Absolutely.
You know, that's a good way of putting it because I was trying to get through this on Twitter earlier, and I'm like, I totally get the attraction. Like, he's the greatest player I've ever covered. I mean, he was unbelievable for all of his time with the Cardinals. And, you know, the impact that he had on the franchise is just immeasurable. And it would be super cool, right, if he has that uniform on and he steps to the plate at Busch Stadium. I mean, come on. Who wouldn't have goosebumps? Who wouldn't be like, this is absolutely amazing? It's just hard to make the logical argument that there's a fit for this team, even if you're talking about a bench job, just because you kind of have one of those guys already in Matt Carpenter. Like, they're eerily similar, by the way, when you look at, like, statistics over the last 3 years, when you look at batted ball data. Like, there's a lot of similarity between those two guys, and I don't know that you want two of those guys.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know it's gotten a lot of run in St. Louis this year with Carp, but Albert's actually got some of that little expected ball upside. Again, I'm not really buying it, but you look at some of the StatCast stuff, and you know, his expected batting average, his expecting slugging percentage is not necessarily line up with what the bottom line production is over the last couple of years, which, of course, makes you think it's a little bit of small sample size theater here earlier
sure,
in the year. But, yeah, he's definitely got some, lightning in a bottle, kind of bench bat DH type of value, but without the universal DH this year, if he's got any type of home outside of the sentimental angle we talked about at the top, I think it's definitely going to be in the American League. And even for an American League team, I think it's kind of a tough case to make. So, yeah, I think there would be some redundancy with Carp. But again, if it happens in September, I will walk back to New York to be in the stands to watch it.
That's fair. I'll be out. You're right. That's a good point. I would definitely be there. I think some Cardinals fans made a good point on it, you know, on Twitter today, just talking about how, you know, this would be so much fun. Like, it, you know, it would be a fun thing to be able to root for him to pinch hit a couple of times a week. And, you know, people get out there and break out their Pujols jerseys and he'd get all of the recognition. But, I mean, I was kind of speculating earlier, Keith, that, I mean, look, he's 33 home runs away from 700. You know, if that matters to him at all, he needs to find a place where he can play at least somewhat regularly. And, I mean, with Goldschmidt at first base here, that's just not going to happen. And then I saw the quotes from about 15 minutes ago out of Anaheim with Joe Maddon saying, quote, he does not want to be a bench player of any kind. And I'm like, well, kind of kills that story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as you know, it's a catch-22 at his age and with his kind of health track record, with his feet in particular. You know, if he doesn't want to be a bench player and doesn't want a part-time role, then you're talking about, well, how long is it going to take him to get to that 33 home run number? Because the more he's on the field at this point in his career, the returns, as low as they are already at this point, all due respect to Albert, are going to be even more diminishing when you're talking about some of those foot and heel issues he's dealt with. So, obviously, an unbelievable, legendary career, but 700 seems like a long shot. In St. Louis seems like a long shot to me, too. But it'll definitely be interesting to see where he winds up. He's certainly going to get some calls, and I do feel like he'll find a home eventually, whether or not it's something that we include in the highlight reel when he ends up in Cooperstown, that's another question.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, we'll close the Albert part of the conversation on this, Keith, but immediately there were like three things that got named, right? First one was the Cardinals because of the obvious history and the connection. The second one was the White Sox and Tony La Russa and having a reunion there. Now, I don't know what you're going to do with your mean Mercedes while he's crushing the baseball. I don't see that there's a regular spot there now, but they have lost two everyday lineup members for the season with Jimenez and Luis Robert. So they actually might be able to move some things around where there are some at-bats available at some point, because I don't know that we expect Mercedes to be this good all season long. And the other one that came up was Mike Matheny and the Royals, with not just the Mike Matheny connection there, but also the fact that, you know, Albert came out of Kansas City.
Yeah, I actually hadn't thought about the Royals connection. That is interesting. I'm with you on the White Sox. I don't think Mercedes is going to be obviously he's not going to hit 400 the whole year like he came out of the gates doing in April, but given what they've got in the lineup now, it would be hard to not have Mercedes in there every day, and he's really a DH only, so that complicates the fit in Chicago. But Kansas City is certainly an intriguing place for him. I mean, I think it was I don't want to say this without credit. It might have been Brendan Kiley from 101 who said that the market inefficiency for the Royals this year, I know he's a Kansas City guy, might have been just trying to win in terms of what teams are doing in the American League Central. They got a lot of good veteran players in there, you know, not necessarily guys that the Astros or the Rays of the world would have been targeting, but some guys with track records, and they're doing well so far, you know, coming back to earth a little bit here in the last week or so. But Kansas City, I don't hate that as a sort of sleeper pick for somewhere Albert might wind up. That could be something to keep an eye on for sure.
They also have some movable parts, right? I mean, like, you can have Whit Merrifield play second base, and that means that Soler plays right field, which opens up DH. I mean, that's not that hard of a move because, right, your second baseman otherwise is probably Nicky Lopez, right, or Hanser Alberto. I mean, like, it's not like they can't make it work at least part of the time. So if you're looking at, like, opportunities to get at bats, that may be your spot. But obviously, with them trying and after actually being off to a decent start before this five-game losing streak, you wonder how much production he would have to bring for them to even try to do that.
Yeah, I guess we're sort of answering our own questions now as we go through these teams. if the answer to this question is they're off to too good of a start to risk bringing him in, then how much value does he really have? So,
yeah,
I mean, it could be any AL team, and that AL Central could be a landing spot with either of those two that you mentioned.
Keith Costas is with us from MLB Network. And, Keith, switching to the Cardinals, more specifically to the Cardinals here and things that we've seen lately, what's your take on the recent run? I know today was kind of with 11 walks and a really kind of slow, boring game and not a lot of offense. But, I mean, they've won 10 of the last 14. There have been some good things. I don't think anything's perfect yet, but at least it looks better than it did the first couple weeks.
Yeah, not perfect, but I would say that the last couple of weeks looks pretty close to what you would have hoped it would look like if things had gone well for the Cardinals within reason.
I mean, right.
Obviously, you could throw out some kind of, you know, Goldschmidt and Arenado finished 1-2 in the MVP. Flaherty went to Cy Young. That's a, you know, a crazy scenario. But in terms of a reasonable expectation for what a good Cardinal team looks like, these last couple of weeks are pretty close to what I think most fans would have thought, which is solid starting pitching, very good starting pitching the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
I know Arenado's numbers aren't going to look like what they looked like in Colorado, but you look at what he's put up, at least just looking right here at these stats coming into today, he's basically right where I would have expected him to be coming out of Colorado. You know, like a 270, 280 hitter, not a lot on base, but tons of doubles, a lot of homers, and, you know, take it for what it's worth. I know it's kind of a dirty word, but he's on pace for well over 100 RBIs. I mean, yeah. Is he going to be a 950 OPS guy? No. But is he going to drive in close to 100 with an 850-ish OPS? Yeah, I think he is. And he's made a real difference in the middle of that lineup. Same thing at the top of the lineup with Edmund. Is he a perfect leadoff hitter? Is he going to be a 400 on-base guy? No. But if you're playing great defense and you're leading the league in hits, guess what? Hits count for on-base, too.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with getting on-base with a single. And he's proven that he's a well-above-average hitter in terms of batting average, and that's going to translate to some on-base ability too. So the top of the lineup looks good to me. Obviously, they still have some questions with the depth of the offense, and I think that they've come around on the pitching. You know, you mentioned all the walks today. That's kind of what you can expect from Gant. I'm pretty sure that he had the highest walk rate in the majors coming into today. So to get through this first, you know, 5-6 weeks of the rotation with Gant as your number five, I think they're 3-3 in his starts. That's good enough until they can help kind of hold things down until they get fully healthy in that rotation, assuming that when Michaelis comes back, he actually is back. So once the things kind of settle down in terms of the health, I think that the Cardinals are pretty well positioned to be in the position that fans could have reasonably hoped they would be in.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I was talking about this the other day, Keith, that if you told me on opening day that on May 6th they'd be 18-14 with Paul Goldschmidt having an OPS under 700 and Paul DeJong being under 700 and Yadi on the injured list and Matt Carpenter really not bringing anything to the table at all, I'd have been like, that's pretty good. Like, if you're 18-14 with those things going on, I would say that a lot of other things are going right. So I guess it's not perfect, and there are things that need to get better over the next 5 months, but the result is not as bad as it could be considering some of those problems.
No doubt. Well, two kind of big picture points off of what you just said as far as league-wide. First of all, injuries are up across the league
like
exponentially. The IL stints, I think, compared to 2019, Ken Rosenthal had an article yesterday, they're up 15% in April based on 2019. The two teams leading the way, the Padres and the Brewers, which are obviously two teams that the Cardinals are going to be focusing on all year. You figure that the Dodgers and Padres are probably the two best teams in the National League. One of them will end up as the wild card, and obviously the Brewers as the main competition in the Central. So if the Cardinals had their injury issues, sure they have, but the teams that they're probably going to be focusing on in the standings come September have been ravaged by injuries.
Yeah.
So relatively speaking around the league, the Cardinals aren't doing all that bad on the health front. And then you talk about the actual record. Look, this is a little bit of a quirky stat, but for the first time in Major League history, we don't have a single team that got through their first 30 games with a winning percentage over 600. So no team, even the Dodgers got out to a third. Yeah, I know, right? Even the Dodgers got out to a 13-2 start and then lost 12 of their next 16. The A's had the best record in baseball through their first 30. They lost their first six games of the year. So there really hasn't been any team that's jumped out and really separated from the pack and looks like they're just going to boat race their way to a division title. So it's kind of a quirky year, and every team is still in the mix. And you talk about the Cardinals with their record right now, that looks just about as good as anybody in the league going forward.
You're right. I mean, look, 18 wins is the most in the National League. And what do you have, two teams in the American League that have 19? And that's it. And I mean, they're all – and everybody's jammed up, right? I mean, everybody's together, which is good, I think. I hope this lasts, Keith. I don't know that it will, but I really hope it does, because to me that leads to some excitement, some competitiveness, and maybe more fan bases staying engaged a little deeper into the year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you look at the teams that, you know, people in the middle of the country, and I can certainly empathize with it, get sick of hearing about the Dodgers and the Yankees all the time. Look at those divisions. You know, the teams that got the run as the big contenders, the Padres, you know, the Rays obviously as a defending pennant winner, maybe the Blue Jays as an emerging team. It's the Red Sox and the Giants in the AL East and the NL West right now at the top of the standings. So, yeah, it's fun in some of these divisions. Do I think Boston's going to be there? Do I think San Francisco's going to be there at the end? Probably not. You can have winning records, but probably not contending with those heavy preseason favorites. But, yeah, I'm with you. For the time being, having four or five teams in the mix in some of these divisions is nothing but good in my from my perspective.
So staying on to the Central Division for a second, Keith, I mean, we touched pretty good detail on the Cardinals' position. You mentioned the Brewers. Man, if Christian Yelich is going to have back problems for really any length of time, it's going to be rough for them because they can really pitch, especially the front end of the rotation and the very back end of the bullpen. But, boy, you know, there's only so much you can do, as we've seen with the Cardinals. There's only so much you can do without a little bit more offense. And, I mean, that'd be the equivalent of taking the Cardinals lineup and not having Arenado or Goldschmidt in the middle.
Yeah, I'm with you. Every time I talked about the Brewers leading up to the season, I kind of just penciled Yelich in as a given that he was eventually going to get back to what we've seen.
But yeah,
you said it. A back is a very concerning injury of all the injuries a hitter could have. That is something that you don't want to see. And you kind of read the tea leaves on Craig Counsell's comments the other day about him having to shut it down and really get to the bottom of what the issue is here before he goes forward as far as not risking further injury. That is concerning. And you look at the middle of that order, too. The other guy who's kind of a less likely candidate to get back to what we'd seen in terms of being his best self, Keston Hira. You know, with no Yelich in the middle of that lineup, that's a lot of strikeouts from a guy like Hira, who they thought was going to be a big force in that lineup. So, yeah, you said it. They can pitch it with Burns and Woodruff, the back end of the bullpen, and they do have a little bit of the feel. I almost call them like Tampa Light. There's just something in the air up there in Milwaukee where it feels like they just have that kind of secret sauce with pitching right now, where everything they touch kind of turns in the right direction. I feel like they're going to have more guys like Burns and Woodruff down the line that kind of come out of nowhere with a more modern pitching approach. But, yeah, no Yelich in the middle of that lineup is a big, big issue for them.
So last thing I have for you, Keith, just in your research and your work at MLB Network, from the conversations you guys have both on and off the air, what's one thing you think that from this season so far league-wide is a really good development, and what's the most concerning? Is it just simply too many swings and misses and obviously a lot of standing around?
Yeah, I think all the issues that have been bantied about over the last couple of years are very real issues, and they're not going anywhere. The pace of play, the ball not being in play enough. I don't have the answer to the chicken and egg question. Is it the style of hitting? Is it just that the pitching has gotten too good? I'm not sure. I know that there's been a lot of ideas thrown around in the last couple of years. I work with John Smoltz on a pretty consistent basis, and he's been on a big kick the last couple of weeks about, and I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on this too, that lowering the strike zone might be the most effective way to get more offense back in the game, that the high strike, particularly the high fastball, has just become too overpowering of a pitch. When every staff has four, five, six guys that are flirting with triple digits or at least consistently throwing in the mid to upper 90s, it's just a matter of physics. Hitters just can't handle that type of velocity at the top of the zone, at least not with a consistent approach that's going to yield consistent results. So I do think that the lack of action offensively in the game is something that continues to be a big concern. But going back to what we talked about earlier, I think sort of the parity across the league in terms of how competitive a lot of these mid-market teams have been in the first 5 weeks of the season or so is a great development for the game, especially with the kind of oddities that we've been dealing with in the baseball world and obviously the world at large over the last 18 months, you know, having teams like Kansas City and even if it might be a brief run, Seattle or, you know, any of these teams that are kind of popped up as surprises so far, that feels a little bit more substantial than the annual hot streaks you get at the beginning of the season. These teams are actually playing good baseball. They haven't just won games. The Royals are playing good baseball. If you watch them every night, I know they've slowed down a little bit, but just the competitiveness across the league, I think, has been a big plus so far.
Agreed. And that's interesting to hear that on Smoltz. So here, I'll try to do this very quickly, Keith, but like Derek Gould and I, on his podcast, the best podcast in baseball, we were arguing about this probably for a half an hour about whether his argument was to grow the strike zone, but only at the bottom end, right? So to make it bigger, but make it so that the guys have to swing the bats. My argument at the time was shrink the strike zone, but then I've kind of come to the conclusion that the hybrid of our two ideas in the argument is probably the way to go. And it sounds like what Smoltz was arguing, which is leave the strike zone the same size, but just push everything down. Push everything down lower because gravity can then help the bat speed up if you're going down to the baseball. When you're trying to swing level at that high fastball, I mean, it's just, as you point out, the physics of it don't really work, especially with the spin rate stuff that we know about now. I think that might be a good way to look at it because if we go back to the late 90s and the early 2000s, if we go back to the I know it was the steroid era, but it was also an era where there were a lot of home runs and a lot of offense outside of that. The strike zone was much smaller the way that it was enforced. It wasn't smaller in the rule book, but it was smaller in practice. The high strike didn't exist. I don't think that came back until like the mid-2000s, maybe even the late 2000s coming into 2010. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, when you have it lower and smaller, there's just an easier way to cover that ground. Be interesting to see if that's a conversation moving forward, because I know pitchers would hate it, but they're going to hate anything that's going to mean more offense.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I heard your conversation with Derek, and I agree with your kind of post-game analysis that you guys were ultimately talking about the same thing and arrived at a similar point, albeit a very different starting point in that conversation that you had. I think we're all kind of talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
That high strike, that high fastball, it's such a game changer. And I would say you probably saw it, but listeners should check out Tom Verducci's piece that he wrote earlier this week. It was about Chris Bryant, but it had a lot of good information about how Bryant came into the league as kind of that prototypical launch angle oriented hitter. He was the guy who came out and said, I want to hit four fly balls every game and hopefully some of them find the gaps or clear the fences. He was very deliberate about his approach to hitting, and he's kind of rethought that whole idea and has obviously had a resurgence season this year. And
yeah,
a lot of the information in there just spoke to what we're talking about right now. You know, regardless of how the strike zone is actually being called, pitchers have figured it out. And it's not just the velocity, the frequency at which they're going into that upper third and above of the zone has just increased exponentially over the last, you know, decade. Forget about the early 2000s.
Yep.
Just in the last 5-10 years, it is a whole different ballgame in terms of how often velocity is coming up in the zone, and hitters are more or less helpless against it with the modern approach.
Keith, thanks so much for doing this, man. I love our conversations. We'll definitely look forward to doing it again here soon. In the meantime, enjoy the games. Keep up the great work at MLB Network, and obviously we'll reach out to you somewhere down the road, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Have a good one.
All right, you do the same. Keith Costas from MLB Network. And I want to pick back up on that piece of that conversation coming up next. So we'll follow up on this idea about, you know, changing it up. And yes, launch angle is a thing that people hate, but if you lower the strike zone and look at it more like the lens of 2002, I think maybe we can come up with a solution. Get to that next up here on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Get the inside story on what's happening with your St. Louis Cardinals this season directly from the Redbirds manager. It's the Mike Schilt Show, Sunday mornings at 10:15, sponsored by Bath Fitter on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
And we're talking about the strike zone on the strike zone here on KMOX. Brought that conversation up with Keith Costas, and I think that that is going to be the only way, really, that you can legislate more action into the game. You know, I mean, I've had this conversation a few times, so I won't belabor it, but, you know, I hear all the time, hitters just need to change their approach. Choke up, go the other way. I'm like, you can't force that. You can say it until you're blue in the face, but you can't make anybody do it. You have to make the rules involving the side of the baseball that controls the baseball, which is the defense. It's the pitching side of things. The only way that the sport can legislate more action is by putting some kind of limitations on either the pitcher or the defense or both. It's the only way you can do it. You can't make hitters swing the bat. You can incentivize it. You can suggest it. You can... You know, this was my argument against Derek Gould when we were talking about this, was like, if you're just going to make the strike zone bigger and lower, but it doesn't mean they will swing. Now, it would be in their best interest to, but it's in their best interest to do it now, and they don't. So I think the only way to do it is by working on the defensive side, in particular on the pitching side. And, you know, this has been a thing that's known in baseball for a long time, but high velocity is damn near impossible to catch up to. And it's just gravity, guys. The higher the ball is in the zone, the more the hitter has to work against gravity to generate bat speed. When you're not working down to the ball, which is anything that's below your hands, which is anything that's down, you know, from your belly button to the top of your shoes, you get a little bit of help from gravity with the barrel accelerating downward. When you're getting up to the top of the zone, the barrel is going to be flatter, and you're going to have to create more of that just with your body. And you're going to have gravity kind of dragging at the barrel as you're going a little bit. And that's part of the reason why it's tougher to do. So if you just bring the entire big strike zone the way that it is and just slide it all down, which is what Keith Costas was saying is John Smoltz's suggestion. And if you look at the era of the late 90s and early 2000s, the strike zone was small and it was low. And by the way, that, you know, pitchers were good at pitching low back then, right? It was all sinkers and sliders and everything was at the bottom of the zone. But part of the reason that hitters had so much success, in addition to the steroids, because I don't want to leave that out, that was part of it. But one of the reasons they had so much success was they had less area to cover. And I don't exactly remember when it was. It was sometime, I think, late 2000s, near 2010, where Major League Baseball started to bring back the high strike. And this was when umpires started to be graded electronically, right? So that their pitches were being graded based on what the electronic strike zone showed. And they said, hey, listen, guys, you got to start calling the high strike. It's a strike in the rule book. We got to start calling it. And that's one of the that's about when the time started where strikeouts really started to go up. And now with pitchers taking advantage of that, I mean, there's only one way to fix it, and that's to bring the thing down. All right, more baseball coming your way in a second here on The Strike Zone on KMOX.
Welcome back to The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, so to wrap up this hour, and we're going to talk a little more about Albert in the next hour. We're going to talk a little more on the minor leagues, specifically the Cardinals minor league system with Jim Callis from MLB.com. But since finishing up the conversation that we had with Keith Costas and the idea about creating more contact and action and all the ideas about that. Again, I just retweeted this. This was from April 28th, and an account on Twitter called @MLBRandomStats. And it was just an interesting comparison. I think I mentioned this last week, but I want to repeat it because it's a big part of the conversation we're having right now. And it's a comparison between 2002 and 2021. Like line drive rate, ground ball rate, fly ball rate, walk rate, strikeout rate, right? The numbers are all identical. It's 21% line drive rate for both years, 43.5% ground ball rate for both of those years, 35.5% fly ball rate for both of those times. So even though we're talking about 19 years ago, in the middle of the greatest offensive era that you could think of, the biggest numbers you've ever seen in baseball history, And now a year where everybody's complaining about those same numbers, justifiably so, by the way, the line drive rate, ground ball rate, and fly ball rate have not changed. The Major League Baseball walk rate has not changed. It was 8.8% back then. It's 8.7% now. The only thing that's changed is the strikeout rate. Back then, it was just under 17%, and now it's 24.5%. That's a big jump, by the way. That's almost a 50% jump. So why is that, right? What's the difference? And again, as the MLB at MLB Random Stats account tweeted, it's not the launch angle. It's not. The only thing that's new about launch angle is the term itself, the usage of it, and the fact that we can measure it now. The idea has been a part of what hitters have been doing this entire time, going back to the mid to late 90s when people realized, wow, we can hit a lot of home runs if we hit the ball in the air more. And that's when you saw all those home runs. And so steroids are not, if you're not hitting it in the air, it isn't going over the fence. And what has changed is not the desire to hit home runs, because that's been there for 25 years. More than that, but it's really been there for 25 years, right? Like, it's really been there. What's changed is velocity and philosophy for pitching up in the zone with high spin rate fastballs. And the fact that those are called strikes now and hitters have to try to hit it, where 20 years ago, those were not called strikes. They were high. Hitter didn't have to even think about that ball. You just spit on it. You don't need it. Maybe the truth is, maybe the simplest way to fix all of this is to do what Keith said that John Smoltz has been suggesting and what I've been talking about, which is take the whole strike zone and lower it all so that you actually don't have to defend that high strike anymore. All right, let's get some more baseball, a little more Pujols in after the top of the hour news here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, 7 o'clock hour here, the Strike Zone for KMOX. It's kind of part of Sports Open Line. Cardinals fell today, man. That was a tough one. I agree with what I think it was John. I think John Rooney said it. I can't remember if it was he or Mike Shannon that said it, but I think John said it and Mike agreed. It's like this game felt like it was forever. And it did, because, you know, that, you know, when we were talking about the pace of game last hour with Keith Costas, this is kind of the thing you're talking about, right? I mean, 11 walks. That takes forever, man. I mean, I mentioned, you know, the average major league game, there are about 145 pitches per team in the average major league game. And the Cardinals threw 192 pitches today. So that's a lot, right? I mean, that's like a 30% increase in the average. So that's a lot of pitches, and that leads to, and let's be honest, too, part of the game being long today, too, is you had a 15-minute rain delay at the beginning, and then you had a 17-minute rain delay during the game. So there's an extra half hour that didn't need to be there. But even outside of that, it was a game that dragged. And look, Taijuan Walker, to me, deserves a lot of credit for the way that he threw the baseball. I mean, he's got good stuff. When he throws strikes, you're going to have a hard time with him. But, you know, the Cardinals side of things, you know, the walks are a problem. And that's going to be a thing. You know, like, look, Miles Mikolas began his rehab assignment last night, and the numbers weren't great. I think he gave up 3 earned runs in 2 1/3 or something like that. The results don't even matter. It's just that he's going to be able to get, or at least now they don't. I'm sure they're going to matter a little bit more when he gets closer to his return to the big leagues. I don't know if they're going to rush him back if he's getting smacked around, but, you know, the point here is that he just doesn't have any setbacks. And when he comes back, I think it's pretty clear that the guy that's going to the pen is John Gant. I mean, that walk rate is really unsustainable for a starting pitcher. And the only way you can get by with that as a starting pitcher is if you strike a ton of people out. And that's just not John Gant's game. So far this year, I believe he's walked 18 guys in 25 innings, which is a ton. I mean, that is a ton. I'm sorry, now it's 24 walks in 29 1/3. That's way too much. Just by comparison, if you were to add up Jack Flaherty, 10 walks, Adam Wainwright, 9 walks, Carlos Martinez with 9 walks, and then Kwanyoung Kim with 4. All of those combined are only 32 walks compared to 24 for Gant. So the 4 other starters have 32 walks, and that's in 22 games. And Gant's got 24 walks in 6 games. I mean, that is a lot. So, you know, if that doesn't change, it's pretty clear that he'd be the one that gets bumped to the bullpen when the time comes for Michaelis to return, assuming everybody else is healthy. And, you know, with Carlos throwing well here lately, you know, they're not going to be in any hurry to bump him out of there. I will say I'm a little bit, it's too early to be overly concerned. I'm a little bit worried about what we're seeing with Tyler Webb. I mean, he's now walked 11 batters in 9 innings, and he's given up 9 hits to go with that. So 20 base runners in 9 innings is a lot. And when you look at what he's done the last couple of years, it's very uncharacteristic. Like, that is not typical for what he's done. If you look at last year, for example, he allowed a total of 26 base runners. I'm sorry, that's not correct. A 24 base runners in 21 and a third innings. And this year, he's allowed 20 base runners in 9 innings. I mean, that is a massive difference. And the previous year, you go back to 2019, he allowed 56 base runners in 55 innings. That's perfectly good. So, I mean, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong, and it doesn't mean that he won't recover, but I think it is an area of concern, especially with Andrew Miller on the injured list. I mean, you're right now down to one lefty that's getting people out, and that's Hennessy Cabrera. So, again, a point of concern is not necessarily something I think you got to panic and act on at the moment, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on moving forward. When you look at how you could handle that, though, like, where does that help come from? And we saw Bernardo Flores Jr. get a look in the doubleheader yesterday. He did not look ready for the big leagues. He faced 3 batters, walked 2, gave up a hit, and then came out of the game. Maybe that's just nerves. Maybe it's just a one-time only outing and he'll be better the next time around. But, you know, the left-handed side of the pen, whether it's getting Miller healthy or getting Webb on track, I mean, it's going to become more important to get Webb on track. And we know from 2 straight years, he can do that. I mean, we watched him do it for 2 years, be very solid and reliable. And look, he's not a dominant pitcher, but he's been good. He's been fine. So you got to get him back to somewhat of a normal performance level for him before you get too much deeper into the year. And I will say, usage is a little bit of a concern, and it's not his fault, I don't think. I don't even think it's Mike Schilt's fault, really, because when you look at part of the usage, it came in the first couple of weeks when the starting pitchers weren't getting deep into games and they were putting all that load on the bullpen. I mean, Tyler Webb in the first month of the year has 13 games already. He had 21 appearances all last year. You know, that's a lot. I mean, he's on pace for a lot of work. And obviously you don't really want to have it go down that path. Anyway, that's what happened earlier today. Cardinals pitchers struggled. They walked a lot of guys, and that led to really 3 easy runs for the Mets. I mean, there's only one run where they accomplished the work, and even then it was still the result of walks. It was bases loaded single for Dom Smith, but 3 of the 4 runs were on bases loaded walks, and hopefully that'll all get corrected going into tomorrow against the Rockies. And you've got a pretty good pitching advantage tomorrow with Jack Flaherty on the mound, although it'd be fun to see Austin Gomber against the Cardinals. He's been up and down this year. He's had a couple of really, really solid outings. He's had a couple of really blow-up outings. So for tomorrow's sake, wouldn't mind seeing the blow-up outing. And nothing against Austin Gomber. I think he's a good pitcher. But the Cardinals need to win games against teams like the Rockies, right? You got to do what you did against Pittsburgh. You got to beat teams like the Rockies because you're going to have a harder time against the better teams as you go through the rest of the regular season. All right, so stick around. We're going to be doing we got so much more that I want to get to as we go through all of this. We're going to be talking more about the Cardinals farm system, minor league ball being back in general, a few other things we want to get to as a part of building the future powered by Graybar. That'll be coming up next in my conversation with Jim Callis from MLB.com. He is the guy behind MLB Pipeline, which is all of the prospect stuff that they do at MLB.com. We'll get to Jim Callis next up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on the Strike Zone here as a part of Sports Open Line on KMOX. Not the most exciting Cardinals game earlier today. 4-1 loss with three of those four runs being walked in. Not exactly the best brand of baseball with 11 walks, but still a four-game series that was split, two games apiece, and the Cardinals have been playing a lot better here over the last several weeks. Now, we're going to turn our attention away from what's happening at the Major League level right now and talk a bit about what's coming. And very happy to have Jim Callis with us from MLB Pipeline, senior writer there. You can find all of that work, by the way, at MLB.com. You'll find Jim on Twitter, at Jim Callis MLB. First of all, Jim, thank you for doing this. And I guess, second of all, is it fair to say, like, Happy New Year now that we've got minor league baseball going again? I mean, for all of us that love prospects and love minor league baseball, it's great to have it back.
It really is, because, I mean, you know, especially with it getting pushed back a week, too, Kevin. I mean, it was 20 months since we had our last minor league game. Like, I know, I mean, maybe not quite that. I did the AAA National Championship game in Memphis, I want to say. It's so long ago. In September, I think, 2019. And there was no minor league games after that. You know, so, yeah, no, it's great to have it back.
And obviously a little early to be, you know, talking about individual performances or anything like that. But a lot of changes. I mean, this is clearly an historic season in the minor leagues, right? I mean, total restructuring, a lot of things change. Major League Baseball is now in charge of the minor leagues. And I know there are a lot of things, Jim, about the changes that I didn't love originally, and I still don't love all of those things, but I do understand why they went the direction that they did.
Yeah, I mean, I probably should be careful what I say, but I work for MLB. No, I mean, look, I mean, I understand why they did it for financial decision. This will save some money by contracting the minors. I would just suggest that there may be some things you can't quantify with dollars and cents in terms of having baseball in more markets and building allegiances to baseball and specific organizations and that type of thing. And I'm a little sad that's been lost in a number of markets.
No, I'm with you 100% there. There are, again, elements of it that I don't like, but I agree that there are some common sense things that are happening too, and hopefully conditions will continue to get better for minor league players and all of that as we continue to move forward. So let me ask you, I know this is kind of a topic that we're talking a lot about, Jim, at the major league level, which is especially pitcher usage, but I think this will probably translate into, you know, how much regular, you know, everyday players play as well. But I'm going to be really interested to see how teams handle prospects and workloads this year.
Yeah, they're going to have to be careful. I've been wondering about that, you know, even before, you know, the major league or minor league season ramped up, because, you know, for pitchers, I mean, it's usually progression with, you know, when you're talking about minor league pitchers, you know, usually, like, well, let's for instance take, you know, Matthew Liberatore. Guy comes out of high school,
right?
You know,
was
drafted by the Rays, obviously. You know, pitches, you know, 30 innings in his debut, roughly, with the Rays. Then, you know, first full season, they cap him at about 80 innings. You know, maybe a little bit more conservative than some teams, but not atypical, you know, 80, 90, 100 innings. Then last year, you know, he would have pitched, you know, 110. And this year, you know, 140, 150, roughly.
Right, right.
And, you know, yes, you know, he participated in some things last year, but, you know, working in the... I can't remember if he was particularly. I'm guessing he probably was at their alternate site or instructional league.
He was.
It's not the same. You know, it's not the same as pitching every fifth day. And so, you can't just say, well, you know, he would have pitched 110 last year, so we'll have him do 150 this year. Like, you can't do that. And I know from talking to a lot of farm directors, I think on the pitching side of things, you're going to see, you know, that there's, like, the minor league rosters have been expanded a little bit, and I just think they're going to spread the workload out among more pitchers. And then for the hitters, while, you know, it's not the same incidence of, like, you're not going to, you know, blow out your arm if you swing too much. I mean, we've seen at the big league level even, and they played 60 games last year. There seems like there's been a number of soft tissue injuries.
Yeah.
And I think also, you got to factor both hitters and pitchers. Some of these guys are going to want to make an impression right away after not getting to play at all last year, and you're just going to have to make sure guys don't overdo it. So I think that's going to be, you know, not just, you know, hey, you know, teaching pitchers, you know, how to throw more strikes or hitters how to make more contact or improve their defense. I mean, really managing a workload is going to be more a significant part of development this year, I think, than ever before.
Yeah, and also interesting to me, Jim, to see – I mean, now that we've seen all of the minor league rosters out, to see how some teams have assigned different players, because we don't really have a, you know, we don't have anything to go off of. Normally you'd be like, well, this guy did great in A ball, high A ball last year. He'll probably be at double A. And, you know, we got guys jump, like you mentioned, Libertor. I mean, he goes straight to triple A. So clearly he impressed the team in spring training. He impressed the team with the alternate site work. Zach Thompson, another Cardinals prospect, starting the year at triple A Memphis. And again, it's hard to tell, you know, for us, because we don't have a lot of game, we don't have any games to go by last year, but obviously the teams each have to decide based on what they saw where these guys belong and really kind of how that impacts their clock.
Yeah, you know, and I think I kind of suspected this talking to people in the offseason. I think the vast majority of clubs, I can never articulate this well, so I'll try to articulate this well here. The vast majority of clubs are acting as if, you know, what players did last year kind of, you know, mirrored where they would have been in the minors.
Right.
You know, they're not acting like 2020 didn't happen at all, and Matthew Libertor, for instance, was in low A, so we're going to send him to high A. I mean, I think if we'd had a 2020, Matthew Libertor would have started the year in high A. He's very advanced. He probably would have been in double A at the end of the year.
Right.
Am I a little surprised he's all the way in triple A? Yes, but, like, I think that's the type of thing. You know, Zach Thompson, you know, you mentioned, in triple A. You know, in his pro debut, he went almost immediately to high A, so he probably would have been in double A last year. So that's a progression for him.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, you know, Nolan Gorman now. You know, he, you know, had played, you know, half a season in A ball or low A, half a season in high A. It wasn't great in either one, so he probably would have begun the year in high A and maybe finished the year in double A, and so he's back in double A. You know, Ivan Herrera, you know, was a guy who,
yep,
you know, was pretty much in low A in 19 and would have been in high A last year, so now he's in double A, and you just see a number of teams did that. You know, even with all their high school players they drafted, you know, their top two guys, Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn, didn't debut at all, but like in a normal year, they would have been in rookie ball, you know, maybe short season ball, which doesn't exist anymore,
right,
and would have been in low A this year. So now they're in low A. So it just seems like a lot of teams kind of took that approach that we're not going to act like there was no development in 2020. It wasn't a normal year, but we'll act like, you know, these players kind of got, you know, like the equivalent of what it would have been a normal year, and then act like 2020 did happen and go that far in 2021. I do think going forward, you are going to see guys move maybe even a little quicker than we have seen in the past, just because there is no short season level anymore. You know, you're going to basically come out of the draft. If you're a high school kid, you'll probably stay at the complex league all season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, you know, go to A ball, you know, right away the next year, low A. And if you're a college guy, especially if you're a top pick, you know, you'll probably go straight to, you know, you might, you know, dabble at the complex briefly, but you'll go to low A and then maybe be in high A your first full season. They're going to, with fewer teams, they're going to need to move guys around or move guys up, you know, a little quicker, I think, than they have in the past.
That's a great point. And to that point, and it's not exactly, I don't want to say it's exactly directly related to that, but I think tangentially related to that, along with some of the stuff about limiting pitching, you know, limiting innings and all of that. I wonder how much guys like Libertor or Thompson, and just using them for the Cardinals as an example, but really similar guys all across Major League Baseball that are near the majors, I wonder if they get a little Major League time in the bullpen at some point, just to keep on getting work and to maybe use, you know, be able to advance themselves without having to carry too much more of the innings load.
Yeah, I could see that, especially if you're going to call them up this year, because it's, I mean, that's going to be tough because, you know, the big league season obviously lasts longer than the minor league season. So it just winds up being, you know, difficult. You're going to have to manage those guys carefully. I've always felt all along, Kevin, I mean, I grew up in the D.C. area. We didn't have a team at the time. The Orioles were the closest team, and the Orioles, you know, kind of what they would do is they would bring up their best pitching prospects, and they would pitch as, like, mineral relievers, swingmen for a year or so, get acclimated to the big leagues that way, and then they would turn them loose as starters.
Jim Callis from MLB.com, obviously MLB Pipeline, where we read all about prospects, is our guest. We'll pick up the conversation off of that note in just a couple of seconds. And that's What's on Deck, sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck. You can find them at chesterfieldfence.com. We'll get back to our conversation with Jim Callis next up here on KMOX.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Get the inside story on what's happening with your St. Louis Cardinals this season directly from the Redbirds manager. It's the Mike Schilt Show, Sunday mornings at 10:15, sponsored by Bath Fitter on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
All right, back to our conversation with Jim Callis from MLB.com. Of course, man behind the scenes at MLB Pipeline, where you can get all the best prospect information. And by the way, no subscription, just free right there for you. Great stuff, I think, from MLB.com. All right, Jim, so I want to build off of that last topic we were touching on last segment about guys perhaps, you know, pitchers perhaps getting a chance to get called up this year to serve in relief roles as a way of preserving innings and not working them too much as starters. How about the kind of the flip side of that? You know, with major league teams being cautious about innings for their starters, maybe they need to dip into their farm systems a little bit more than we would have otherwise thought. You think that's something we could see, is some of these guys maybe getting to make debuts in 2021, where in a normal year maybe they wouldn't?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the major league season is going to drive all. I mean, you know, development matters, but you also, I mean, ultimately you're trying to have success and keep the major league team going. And
yeah.
And I suspect, you know, we're going to see workload issues at the big league level too. Even though the guys are older, and generally as you get older, I think a little bit more accustomed to variance of workload. Going from 162 games to 60 to 160 or 162,
yeah,
that's going to be tough. And like, you're going to have cases where you have teams that are trying to win, run into pitching problems, and then that's going to maybe change the way you handle your minor leaguers.
No doubt about it. Jim Callis with us from MLB.com, senior writer for MLB Pipeline. Jim, if you were going to look at it now, I know Dylan Carlson has graduated as a prospect and is now just a major league player. When you look at the Cardinals farm system, give me a couple of thoughts on what you see. I mean, we've named a lot of the top guys on your rankings in their top 30. In fact, I think we've named at least the top six or seven, and there are a few more after that that are like Oviedo and Whitley that are currently impacting the major league roster as well. What do you think about the top level, you know, those top 10, 12 guys in their organization as a whole? Is it a pretty good group?
I kind of describe it as a rebuilding system, to be honest.
Okay.
These things are cyclical.
Yeah.
And when you have a team, when's the last time the Cardinals weren't a contender?
Like, well,
I mean,
they've had
like
one losing
years.
Season in 20 years. So
yeah, well, I was going to say. So it's like, you know, I mean, I think it's easier to, you know, maintain a good farm system when you're not, you know, graduating players to the big leagues or trading them for veterans. And I mean, not that they gave up a ton to get Arenado, but you know, the way the system's set up now with the bonus pools internationally and with the amateur draft. If you succeed, you get less money to spend on amateurs, and you're picking lower in the draft and that sort of thing. So, I think they're kind of in a rebuilding phase. I do think last year's draft was very interesting. You know, with the three high school kids they got, with Wynn and Walker and Tink Hentz,
mm-hmm,
all have a lot of upside. The nice thing is, the best four prospects in the system are not that far away.
Right.
You know, we touched on Libertor and Thompson are in AAA, Gorman Herrera in AA. So, if they need help, those guys are close. They have some big guns that are ready to help. And, you know, I mean, if they wanted to make, again, the Arenado trade was not a talent-based trade, but if you want to go out and make a big move, I think they've got enough to go make a big move. But, right now I think, rebuilding depth, I mean, that's going to be a key going forward.
Yeah, I think you've got a good point. And I think they have a lot of guys that kind of maybe fit the Cody Whitley description, guys that are going to help you, but they're not going to be like blow you away prospects, right? I mean, they're not going to be guys that can reach the top 100. They're not that kind of player, but they're guys that they're the Cardinals guys. I mean, let's be honest, Tommy Edman was never a really super highly regarded prospect, but he's just a solid baseball player.
Yeah, he's useful. Cody Whitley, right. he's a nice bullpen piece. You know, is he, you know, like you said, going to be a superstar? You know, no, he's not. You know, Jose Oviedo, does he have a good arm? You know, he does. He doesn't throw a ton of strikes, but, like, is he useful as a spot starter and maybe he eventually winds up in the bullpen? Yeah, you know, they do have guys like that that are useful. You know, Junior Fernandez is close. I mean, Justin Williams is up. Ali Sanchez has been up. You know, they picked up Bernardo Flores Jr. on waivers, and he's kind of your quintessential pitchability lefty. You know, Evan Mendoza is older now, but, like, you know, if you need Evan Mendoza to come up and play a little in the big leagues, and, you know, he could do some things. So, yeah. It's like I said, I mean, it's from a top 100 prospect standpoint, I mean, they've got, you know, three guys on our top 100. Yep. Zach Thompson's not far away, and those high school guys I mentioned could be there in a year or so. So, I mean, they have some high ceiling guys too, but it's just, you know, in terms of, you know, it's not like looking at, you know, say the Rays system or right. the Tigers system, where it's super deep. You know, but again, I think it's very hard to build a super deep system. You know, when you're winning all the time.
Yeah, definitely their biggest challenge when it comes to just continuing the prospect pipeline, if you will. All right, last thing I got.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I was just gonna say too. Like, the hard thing is, I'm just trying to think about this off the top of my head. Like, I mean, when's the last time they even picked in the top 10 in the draft?
Forever.
Had access to one of those players. Like, I mean, I'm just trying to. I'm looking at this real quick, but, like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's not like they ever get a year where they're picking. I mean, literally, the last time they picked in the top 10 was 1998. Wow, it was J.D. Drew. That's how long ago it was. It was J.D. Drew. And
yeah.
I mean, they haven't even picked in the top 15 since 2008, which was Brett Wallace. So,
right.
I mean, again, you know, and again, I mean, the vast majority of the trades you're making, now they did trade for Libertor, but the vast majority of the trades you're making are going in the other direction, where you're giving up guys to go get Paul Goldschmidt and
right,
those
right.
types of moves. So it's hard to build a sparkling farm system, you know, when you're winning all the time. I mean, nobody's complaining about the winning, but, like, you know, you know, it works against you in that regard.
Yeah, and it worked out, right? I mean, you mentioned the Goldschmidt trade. You know, Zach Gallen was a part of the deal that not that trade. He was a part of the Ozuna trade. So they sent
right.
Alcantara and Gallen. I mean, those are two legit starting pitchers, and Carson Kelly is having a great year so far this year. He and Luke Weaver were a part of the Goldschmidt trade. So, yeah, these are guys that would be in your own rotation right now, and you developed them, but you needed the bats, so you went and traded for the bats.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, well, I don't think it's a, you know, if you, you know, I forget where we have them in our rankings. I think they're in the 20s. But at the same time, like, I always tell people, those rankings are really a snapshot in time.
Yeah.
Like, at that particular moment. And they don't really reflect how good the team is at acquiring or developing talent. It's, you know, I mean, this is a team that, you know, is, you know, they're trying to win literally every year. They have a chance to win every year. So they're not just stacking up prospects. If they need something, they're going to trade prospects to go get it.
Absolutely. All right, last thing I wanted to throw at you, Jim, this is a quick one for you, as quick as you want it to be. From the guys that we're looking at in the top 10 overall prospects, which are the ones that you think can have the biggest impact in 2021? I mean, there are a lot of different levels there, but, you know, you got Ke'Bryan Hayes, who will be the starting third baseman in Pittsburgh once he's healthy. Wander Franco, we saw him hit a home run against the Memphis Redbirds the other day. You know, all these guys, Adley Rutschman is close. Jared Kelenic is obviously a guy that could be in the major leagues and could be producing at any point. Which of these top 10 guys at MLB.com do you think have the best chance of impacting this year?
Well, what's crazy, too, is outside of maybe Julio Rodriguez, who's in high A right now, you know, but has played very well, I think almost all the other nine guys in our top 10 have a chance to be in the big leagues this year. Even guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and C.J. Abrams, who have barely played above rookie ball at this point. But, I mean, you know, I think Hayes is the most obvious one, you know, once he gets healthy. I mean, I think he was probably the National League Rookie of the Year favorite until he got hurt, and right now it's probably Carlson. But, you know, I think Nate Pearson for the Blue Jays, there's a team that's trying to win. He's got a great arm.
Yep.
You know, he had some minor injury issues last year when he was up. I think we'll see him at some point. I think Kelenic, you know, unfortunately, I mean, it's not a great look for baseball when it comes out to basically, you know, if he would have signed away, you know, some of his future earning power, the Mariners would have called him up last year. But I think Jared Kelenic might be up in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to go with Kelenic. I mean, as much as I like Franco, the Rays are kind of loaded. I don't think there's an obvious place for him to play right away.
Yeah.
And with the Orioles not contending and the Tigers not really contending, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to call up Rutschman or Torkelson or do it real quick. So I would go with Kelenic and Cabrera. Brian Hayes.
Good calls, good calls. Jim, we always love talking with you, man. You guys do great work for MLB Pipeline. Really appreciate the depth of the work that's there and the regularity with which you guys put stuff up. Thanks so much for that, and we'll look forward to talking again soon, man. But enjoy the start to the season.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, Kevin. And it's fun to actually see these guys playing games and progress towards the big league. So it's an exciting time.
100% agree. Thank you so much, Jim Callis from MLB.com. Especially, you know, again, like tracking this along with the major league team makes it that much more interesting, right? Like Matthew Liberatore tonight making his AAA debut for the Memphis Redbirds, struck out Wander Franco in the first inning. How about that? His first AAA strikeout against the number one prospect in Major League Baseball. I just saw a highlight on Twitter. The number two prospect in baseball, Adley Rutschman of the Orioles, just hit an oppo bomb. So, and just, and to me, it adds to the fun. And it helps you understand, too, like what might be next and when it might be there. So, you know, now Liberatore's at AAA. I mean, if you see him kicking ass and taking names this year, I mean, you could look at him as a valid potential rotation piece for next year. And then you already have a lot of other guys for next year, right? I mean, Dakota Hudson will be back, and Jack Flaherty, of course, will be back. Miles Mikolas is still under contract. Now, Waino and Kwon-Young Kim can be free agents. But, you know, again, maybe you bring one of them back. Maybe you bring them both back. But then you throw in Johan Oviedo. You throw in Liberatore. I mean, this is what normal is like. And I guess maybe that's why I appreciate it so much, because it's like a normal baseball season now. You're like, all right, now I can start to see how far is Nolan Gorman away from being a piece on this team? What are we talking about with Zach Thompson, starter or reliever, whatever it happens to be. Looking forward to seeing all of that play out. All right, coming up, more Cardinals. Next up, they got the Rockies this weekend, and I'll tell you a little bit about what's going on with the Rockies. It's, be honest, not much. They I believe have the third worst record in Major League Baseball. I think the only teams with fewer losses than them are Minnesota and Detroit. So, not going all that well. Although they are hitting, but they're hitting mostly at their park and not so much on the road. We'll talk a bit about the Rocky series this weekend, a couple other quick baseball things, and maybe another note or two on Albert Pujols being designated for assignment today, and you know what that means, and the Angels kind of explaining that move from their perspective this afternoon, too. So we get to all that coming up to close out the show next up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on the Strike Zone here on KMOX. Cardinals getting ready for the Rockies tomorrow, and if you look at Colorado, they've won a couple of games in a row, but they're 12-19 on the season. They had a couple of injury problems, but mostly it's just typical Rockies problems. I mean, we knew this was not going to be great. When they traded Nolan Arenado, they knew that their season wasn't headed in a positive direction. But since we last saw them, the GM has resigned. Jeff Breidich stepped down last week, realizing, I don't know, whether it was just like, this isn't working out, or I'm tired of getting crap, or whatever. Whatever his reasoning was, good to see him getting what he deserves, because he's also kind of an arrogant dude, you know, like ripping on sports writers. Like we all couldn't be as bad at his job as he is. I mean, like, if you're good at your job, that's one thing. But if you're bad at your job and you got enough time in your day to talk down to other people, like, listen, do your job first, then you can talk about other people's opinions of your job. But if you're bad at it, well, I mean, like, yeah, I could be a bad GM of a team, too. it's not really a high standard. I could finish last place every year. In fact, I could guarantee it. If I was a GM of a team, I could finish in last place every year if I wanted to. Wouldn't be hard to do. Anyway, it's a different look now for them, and obviously, you know, that's not going to impact the games this weekend. But they did just take 2 out of 3 from the Giants, winning the last couple of games. So before that, they had lost, I think, 3 out of 4 to the Diamondbacks and lost 2 out of 3 to the Giants. So the Rockies are not a strong team. It'll be interesting to see Austin Gomber against the Cardinals. He's had a couple of games this year where he's been really, really good, and a couple others where you're like, oh, boy. In fact, last week he had one of each of those. His second start of the week last week was decent. The first one was like complete implosion. So I got a feeling he's going to be a little excited to face the Cardinals tomorrow, though, especially at Busch Stadium instead of at Coors Field, where the ball flies the way that it does. So we'll look forward to that. 7:15 for the first pitch tomorrow night at Busch Stadium. And I want to close where we started, which is with the Albert Pujols story. And just in case you weren't here at the beginning of the show and you didn't get a chance to catch some of the stuff that came out of the team's press conference this afternoon, what they said was, yeah, Albert doesn't want to be a bench player. And they believe that Ohtani at DH and Jared Walsh at first base gives them their best lineup. And Albert didn't like that anymore, didn't want to be that way, didn't want it to be that way. And I don't know that it was his call necessarily, but they were very clear about saying he wants to be an everyday player. In fact, Joe Maddon said it almost word for word, said, hey, he doesn't want to be a bench player. So, I mean, look, if that's the truth, and it does resonate, right? I mean, he's 33 home runs away from 700. If he's a bench player, he's not getting 700. He'd have to play 5 years to get to that number as a bench player. And, you know, I understand a lot of people being, you know, sentimental about it. Like, oh, it'd be so great to have Albert back. Based on that, if he wants to play regularly, it's not happening here, not with Paul Goldschmidt at first base. And, you know, the bench thing I was even dubious of, not because he couldn't add anything. I mean, I think it would be amazing to see him in a Cardinals uniform standing at the plate at home, standing at home plate at Busch Stadium and hearing the roar and the standing ovation. I mean, that would be brilliant. But you don't bring a player in for that. You know, and what was interesting to me on Twitter this afternoon, and maybe this is the problem, is, you know, you're spending too much time on Twitter, Wheeler. But what was amazing to me was all I hear all offseason from Cardinal fans is all we care about is winning. You're the Cardinals. You should be thinking about winning the World Series every year. Go win, go win, go win, go win. And then we get to this, and all of a sudden everybody's emotional instead of demanding wins, instead of demanding the best roster. It's like, oh, but it's Albert, which I totally understand. But those are two interesting dynamics opposing one another. And I know I put this out there on Twitter, but I'll mention it for those that either are not on there or didn't see it earlier. But, you know, 2019 through today, so 2019, 20, and 21, Albert Pujols and Matt Carpenter have basically the same offensive numbers. Albert is an 86 OPS plus, so 14% below league average. And Carpenter is 87, so 13% below league average from 2019, 2020, and 2021 combined. You know, one guy's a left-handed hitter that plays three positions. The other's a right-handed hitter that plays one position. Which one do you want on your bench? And I know what you're saying, like, get rid of Carpenter. Well, if you're saying that, then you shouldn't want the hitter that has put up the numbers that Albert has. I understand the argument that you want a better bench, right? Or a better starting lineup, whatever. I mean, I understand anybody's position on that. Of course, you always want your team to be better. But we got mad at the Cardinals. Fans, mad at the Cardinals because they made an emotional decision and they signed Carpenter too early. But now you want them to make an emotional decision? Got to pick a lane, gang. We'll see. I mean, you never know. You don't say no until there's a decision, but I think it's going to be a hard time for Albert to find regular playing time with any team, let alone here, and it's too bad, too, because I'd love to see him get to 700. That'd be awesome. You guys have yourselves a great night. Check in with you again coming up next week. I'm out tomorrow. We'll talk to you on Monday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.